Hi, and welcome to the Reiki from the Farm podcast, brought to you by me, Pam Allen LeBlanc from Hidden Brook Farm. I am a scientist, a businesswoman, and a licensed Reiki master teacher with the International Center for Reiki Training. Each week in this podcast, you'll be entertained as you learn about a wide variety of relevant Reiki topics, helping you become a more knowledgeable and effective Reiki practitioner. We caution you, though, this podcast may also dramatically improve your life, and we are so happy that you're here. So on this week's podcast, we are talking with my friend Jill Teal. Jill is a licensed Reiki master teacher. She's also the social media manager for the International Center for Reiki Training. I met Jill in Hawaii when we were on a retreat, a Reiki retreat with William Rand. And we also have had an opportunity over the last year and a half now to work together, bringing in the lights. Jill is also a licensed massage therapist and a foot reflexologist, and she also does sound healing. So welcome, Jill.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Pam. I'm excited to be here today.
It's really nice to have you, Jill. Before we begin, I just want to let you know about a few of the things that I have coming up, and Jill will let you know what she's got as well. For those of you who are interested in our Reiki Master Mentor Program, we'll be beginning our second series in January, so hop on over to our website and check that out. And you can also sign up for our newsletter there. In January, I have online classes, Level 1 and 2 Reiki, Masters, and Karuna Reiki in the Atlantic time zone. In February, I have online classes in the Mountain time zone, Level 1 and 2 in a master's class, as well as animal Reiki and animal communication. And in March, I'll be teaching in the Australian time zone a Level 1 and 2 Reiki class, a master's class, a Karuna Reiki class, and animal Reiki. And all of the ICRT classes are licensed classes, so I'd love to have you join us if that makes sense for you. And Jill, what have you got coming up?
I'm excited. I actually just wrapped up for the 2020 year. So I just finished a 1 and 2 class, but going into next year, I've got an online Reiki 1 and 2 class towards the end of January. It's a Thursday and Friday class, and I'm in the central time zone. And then in February, I've got a Reiki 1 and 2 the beginning of February, and that's actually a hybrid class, and so that is morning online, and then afternoon we meet in person. And then nice. At the end of February, I've got a master class coming up that'll also be hybrid. In the beginning of March, I've got another Reiki 1 and 2 hybrid in the beginning of March, and then I have another online class in kind of the middle of March for Reiki 1 and 2, and then April, another hybrid class, a master class at the end of that month, and May, I have another Reiki 1 and 2, so that'll be hybrid, or we might even meet in person in May, depending on the weather. We can meet outside if it's nice, and then I have a Karuna class then towards the end of May.
Wonderful. So you've got lots of options, and we are going...
Lots of options, yes. Online, in person, hybrid. A lot of different options for people.
That is really fun. And you are located, Jill?
I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Excellent. And of course, maybe people don't know, but I'm in New Brunswick, Canada, so maybe I should mention that too. Yeah, that sounds great. And we will put a link to your website for anybody who wants to check out those classes, as well as we're going to link people to some of the fantastic articles that you've written for the Reiki News magazine and your social media as well. So I'm just going to begin with an invocation today. And I'm just going to invite you all to close your eyes, take some deep breaths, and to begin your Reiki flowing and bring in any symbols that you wish to use today, however you like to do that, if you like to draw them or think them or speak their names. And you can invite the Reiki energy to fill the room that you're in. And in today's podcast, we're talking about how Reiki can blend with any aspect of your life. In addition to blending with your career, it can blend with your pastimes and also with your religious practices, regardless of what they are. And so I'd just like you to think of some of the areas in your life that you might not be using Reiki with, or that it may work together more closely or flow in more harmony. I'm thinking of your career, your hobbies and pastimes. And think of your spiritual or religious practices, because Reiki can blend with all of those. And just invite the light of Reiki to fill your breath and flow into your body on your breath. We invite the light of divine love to flow through you now, awakening the divine love within you. And now the energy of the divine mind. So Reiki is working with your intuition, your instincts, your innovation, your imagination, your thoughts, your intelligence, your intellect. Every part of you and the divine mind within you wakes up and is revealed to you now. And we invite the light of Reiki to flow into your breath from the divine heart, causing your heart light to shine. You notice that it expands all around you. It shines out in front of you, behind you, and on each side, above you, below you, and within you. And the energy from the earth flows up through the bottoms of your feet. And the energy from the heavens flows in through the top of your head, and they meet together at your heart. And now your Holy Spirit within you ignites. And I invite you to listen to your left, to your right. Listen in front of you and behind you. Listen above you and below you. And now listen within. And as the light of Reiki reveals itself to you, the divine guidance that is possible with Reiki is present and here with you today. And we can invite the Reiki energy and that divine guidance to just show us how Reiki may integrate even more fully in your life. And show you the next steps that it might be important for you to take. We are thankful to be of a lineage of light bringers creating wellness on the earth. Mataquiwasan. Namaste. Amen. Ashe. And so it is. Thank you.
Beautiful, Pam.
Oh, thank you, Jill.
I almost didn't come back.
I almost didn't either. It's good we did, though, perhaps. Mm-hmm. It would be less interesting podcasting, I think. Jill, we had so many topics to talk with you about today that it was hard to narrow down, but I always like to begin by asking how Reiki found you. How did you become in touch with Reiki?
Yeah, as a child, and probably this relates to a lot of people, I've always been drawn to metaphysical stuff, and I think a lot of people coming into this path, even at a young age, are drawn to something. And so I was drawn to like astrology and palm reading and dream analysis. As I got older, in my 20s, I originally went to school for art. And I found myself in my 20s just becoming really stressed out and didn't realize that actually what I was experiencing was like empathy, that I was an empath. And I didn't know what that was. And so I was getting sick and stressed out and, you know, depressed and anxious and all of those things that empaths feel. And my best friend had suggested that I go try Reiki. So I went and had a session and I really liked it. And so I started having some sessions and then I realized that I could learn it. So initially, I actually didn't even know that it was something that you could learn. And so then I ended up taking Reiki 1 and 2 then a couple of years later. And that was 2003, 2004, around that time. And when I took the class, it was just somebody, I just remember looking on Google and the first person that popped up, there wasn't a lot of people. And so the Reiki now, there's a lot, it's a lot more known. And so at the time, there wasn't a lot of choices. I was happy with my choice, but it was way different then. And so then I went and took the 1 and 2 class and really enjoyed it. And then I ended up taking the master class in 2007 was when I ended up taking the master class. Between that time, Reiki actually worked on me emotionally. So I was still pretty young when I found Reiki. I was in my 20s at the time. As I mentioned, I was previously working as an artist and a designer. And so I was still in a corporate world. And so I did a lot of self-Reiki, and I allowed the Reiki to really work and heal me before I was guided to take that next step into the master class. And that happened because I had, around the time, I had met my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, and he was actually going to be going to Mexico for the winter for his birthday, like his 40th birthday, and we had just met, and I ended up getting laid off from my job a week before he left. And so I ended up going. And so we drove there for the winter. And then when I was there, I had a spiritual awakening. And I felt I had what would be considered like a Kundalini awakening experience. And everybody around me was like a shaman or a Reiki practitioner. There was a lot of synchronicity going on. And I knew that I didn't want to go back to my life when I went back. And so Reiki actually guided me and said, when you go back, you need to get more experience with your hands, because Reiki still isn't really known at this time. So if you go into massage therapy, then that is what's going to help to build your business. And then you'll eventually be able to become a full-time Reiki practitioner. And we want you to teach as well. And so all of this sort of guidance came when I was at this point where I was living on the beach, $3 a day, And it just, that was maybe like my first real experience that I would say of that spiritual guidance of Reiki, where it was in all of this stuff. And I'm like, whoa, it's real. And I could really feel it, because at first I didn't really feel the energy flowing through me. But then I realized that there were things that needed to heal before I was going to connect. And then since then, it's actually the whole hands-on part has become one of my strengths because of and going into the massage therapy practice, which gave me a lot of actual physical contact with people. And then I ended up going back, taking the master class, going through the massage therapy program. And so that's how I got into Reiki. And then from there, it's been a part of my life ever since then. And I've just continued on that path for the last about 20 years now.
Wow, Jill, that's fantastic. Yeah. And it's, there must be something about Mexico. In my 20s, I had a huge spiritual awakening in Mexico, too.
That's amazing.
I just realized we it is beautiful. I just realized we had that in common.
Where were you?
I was actually in Monterey. I was
Monterey.
There.
Okay, I've been to Monterey.
Yeah.
The northern part of Mexico. Yes, I know where that is. We drove all the way down to the ocean, and so we spent the majority of our time like near the Puerto Vallarta area, but other smaller beach towns near there. Went a little further south than that, but
It was very commercial, and I was actually there for work and finishing my MBA. But yeah, there's something about Mexico. For
beautiful
sure.
Place, no matter what part of Mexico you're in, it's a varied terrain of, and the energy and the people are just amazing.
I agree. Yeah, just that Mayan influence and it's beautiful. But that was quite a change, Jill. You went from a corporate type job as an artist, but it must have taken quite a bit of study to become a massage therapist.
It's like a certification program. Mm-hmm. So it was 600 hours was the program that I went through.
Okay.
And the way that's set up is that some people can get like a 2-year degree in it, but a lot of times it's like a liberal arts degree with massage.
Okay.
There's some times where people will blend like an Eastern Western practice. And so then like shiatsu with Western, and then that might make it like a 1200 hour program. And so I went to the Aveda Institute. Aveda is like a well-known.
Yes.
Product and company, and that's here in Minnesota. And so Horace Reckelbacher, he's no longer alive, but he founded that practice in Minnesota. So we have a school here. And so the way that it's set up is that in Minnesota, you can be certified after 600 hours of training. So I took what was considered like a Western massage therapy program, but it also had that Ayurvedic influence to it because Aveda comes from those like philosophies. And so rather than shiatsu background, it was more of that influence. And so from there, I did end up becoming an educator and teaching there for about 6 years. So after about 3 years of being in my own practice, I came back and then was taught the students the massage therapy. So in the end, I do feel like I probably got a lot more than that 600 hours because I ended up becoming an educator. But overall, it wasn't too bad. But that can take about a year because a lot of times it's like a part-time program. It was the right amount of time of training, I felt, depending to maybe where you are in your life. I had already gone through college and so forth. And so coming in as another program, it's just like adding on for me. So it was really easy for a lot of the stuff. I really just needed the skills and the paperwork and the certification and the training, of course.
Now, how did you find that Reiki blended with what you did as a massage therapist, Jill? Was there any difficulty with that, or was there any resistance, or did it just seamlessly come together?
That's a great question. I found that it seamlessly came together for me because it was a bodywork modality. I found that people would have faster results with the combined therapy than when they were separate.
Oh.
An example would be that I'd have a client that would come in that would have one treatment with me and say, you know what, I felt more happening with the work that was provided than 10 sessions with another person that just was doing massage and doing massage, like really deep, like cranking on them. Sometimes we feel like I just got to get beat up for it to feel better. Some people like, I just want a spa style. And my style's in between where it's precision. And so the Reiki, like I do a lot of trigger point work. And I think we worked on
my QL. Yes, you know, we did.
Dialed in. So you have a feeling of, I'll just dial in on the spot. and you can apply enough pressure and you release it. And so with the Reiki, a lot of times I can feel the releasing going on through my hands, through my feet, like through the meridians and so forth. So I can feel like where the energy, I'll feel more drawn to those areas.
Right.
So instead of just applying pressure everywhere, it's let's find exactly, because sometimes it could be like the size of a pinpoint.
Right.
And so by just massaging everything around it, you need to release, like it's like pushing a button or a circuit to release that. So what I found is it actually sped things up. It provided more intuition with the actual work and what people needed. Because a lot of people, when they come in for body work, they're like, just do what you think I need. And then there's some people that are like, I have these issues like with my shoulders and so forth. And we know with Reiki, like there's like this whole sort of referral pattern going on. So somebody might have migraines, but then you might be guided to the knees and those knees might release, let's say, the migraine. And I'm just using that as an example.
Yes.
Not as like that's what happens. But the same thing with massage. And so sometimes people might have like right shoulder pain. But we like to balance things out because actually it could be coming from the left shoulder and then there might be a big release in the left shoulder. And so the Reiki actually just really provides like another layer of guidance and intuition. I also find that over the years I've tailored and changed up the techniques. Like sometimes I would do like a full massage with Reiki, but now Reiki's actually shown me that if I start with just Reiki and it will go into their aura and then through their chakras and their meridians, and then it'll start to go into the muscles and the bones. It'll start to actually go to where they need ahead of time. So then we just focus on a specific area. So if it is neck and shoulders, then I'm actually doing way less massage now than I needed to do. So for that 90-minute massage appointment, it's actually more like 30 or 40 minutes. And the other half is actually spent with just doing the Reiki energy to allow it to come in. Then when I go into the massage, it actually like grounds. It starts, that grounding process starts to begin. Things emotionally are already releasing. And so then we can get right into the muscle and I can actually get in pretty deep without any sort of resistance. And then they have really beneficial results from that combination. And so they get that relaxation. They still get that emotional and spiritual and all of the beautiful stuff that Reiki does. And then it really sets that intention on, we're working on this sort of muscular physiological problem. And so then the energy can hone in to release like the energy that's being stuck in that, in those areas.
That it just seems like a beautiful process, Jill. Has anybody ever minded that you combine the two, or are people really very open and interested in the combination?
Yeah, and I market myself as a Reiki business.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started out, I actually started out as massage with Reiki.
Yes.
And so I had separated them. Like I would have, you could just get a massage, you could just get Reiki, or you could get a Reiki massage. And I really like in the beginning felt like I needed, if they're getting a Reiki massage, it really needs to be the whole time. But then I thought, if I'm massaging them, they're really only going to be feeling that.
Yes.
They're not, you know, they're going to be getting the benefits of the Reiki. But Reiki on its own, like it has its own experience. And when you combine it for the whole time with massage, the clients, just their perception is going to go to your touch. And so they may miss some of that subtleness that's going on.
Yeah.
And kind of splitting them up like that in the beginning, that worked. But over time, as it evolved, and I was guided to actually like basically rebrand. Like I rebranded my business several years ago now. And because Reiki guided me at that point and said, you're ready. Like way back when, remember in Mexico, and we told you to do this and then you're going to be doing this, like you're there. And so now it's time to do that. And oh, okay. So I rebranded and it was Reiki, and then it became Reiki with massage. And at that point I was more guided. Everybody that's coming in and signing up for it, that transparency is there and they know that they are coming in for that. And sometimes actually people will come in and we'll talk about it, and then they'll even say, actually, I think I just want Reiki, you know.
Sure.
They'll switch it like, hey, I think I just actually need the Reiki. So I do less and less massage. I still do some, but my business is probably like now 95% Reiki focused.
Yeah.
I just have other tools and techniques, for instance, like the massage, where if somebody comes in and it's like, whoa, this is going on. Well, let's look at some of that soft tissue, but let's really use Reiki as the main tool for this. And so people are seeing, wow, Reiki can do all that. Like you're barely doing anything. In a way, I barely am, because the Reiki energy is actually doing all of the work. So
it's amazing, isn't it? Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you said transparency. So as long as you're upfront with this is what it is, then those are the clients then that you attract. And it occurs to me when you are explaining how it's breaking down now, that it would probably be a lot less physically demanding on you being able to combine the modalities than if you were just doing straight massage therapy. So not only is your customer, and that's so interesting that they said this is, that they're getting the value of 10 sessions out of one session. But so not only are your clients getting the added benefit of the Reiki with the massage therapy, but you are too, I think. And have you noticed that it's less wear and tear on you?
Yes, excellent point. And one of the many reasons of massage therapist burnout, that the average massage therapist usually lasts about 5 to 7 years before they've had maybe even multiple injuries or so forth because of that. And so self-care is extremely important. And even for the Reiki practitioner, I actually wrote an article about self-care and better body mechanics.
We'll include that. A link to that, okay?
Because exactly what you're saying. And so, yes, I have found that as I've allowed the energy to actually just invite the energy to come in and do more of the work and see the results, that I have seen significant improvement on my body and just the wear and tear, which is now I'm in this as a massage therapist. I think I'm going on 14 years or something like that.
Wow, Jill.
So the longevity is there, but the self-care part of it, it's important for everybody. Even if you're not a Reiki practitioner or a massage therapist, we all need that self-care. And I really stress self-care and all of these different things that you can do, which is a whole nother podcast. Won't go off on a whole nother topic, but that, yes. And so answering your question, it does. It helps significantly with my body in being able to continue to be able to do this work and to continue to have a full-time practice taking and seeing clients.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic, Jill. Just win-win all the way around. And
yeah.
Jill, I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit, because I'm aware also that you're a practicing Buddhist. And I just wonder if you could explain to us how Reiki fits into that aspect of your life.
Sure. A little background. I grew up as a Methodist Christian. And so that was when I became a member of the church and was baptized. And so I have that as my background. As I got older and then went to college, part of my electives were studying religion and so forth. And so, again, I've always been drawn to spirituality and metaphysical, and it's just always been stuff that's fascinated me. So I took several classes in college just to learn and educate myself more about what else is out there. For a while, I was drawn to Sufism.
Okay.
And then when Reiki came into my life, it's actually then when Buddhism came into my life.
Oh, interesting.
And so what it actually had happened was, and I remember this still today, I was riding my bicycle and I was with my husband at the time now, so we're still married, but the guy from Mexico, we ended up getting married and we were on a bike ride. And this was before Facebook. So I remember like having these thoughts of, in a way, would be like some sort of like Buddhist meme coming in, like some really wise quote, and then thinking, who's that? Like, how do I know that? And I remember hearing it was the Buddha and that he's with me. And I thought, oh, wow. was this sort of just like revelation while I was riding my bike and this sort of wisdom. I didn't exactly connect it at the time that it was the Reiki that was opening that up, because again, it was still pretty new and stuff. So I was still exploring this whole Reiki thing. But what ended up happening is that my husband actually is a Buddhist, and he'd been practicing Buddhism longer than I have. He's 10 years older than me. And so when he had gone to college, a bunch of his friends went off and actually became lamas and like moved to South America and Taiwan. And so there was a pretty strong group, a Dharma group that was here, that was local. So when I started hearing those teachings, I knew that I had a good resource and I knew that I could connect to a good school. So at that point, then I had said to my husband, I think I'm interested in this. And then one of our teachers, Lama Searing Everest, was coming to town. And so she travels. And so the particular style of Buddhism is Nyingma Buddhism, which is a Tibetan Buddhist style of practice. And so I started going to the teachings. And so one of the main teachings that I practice is called Red Tara. And you've probably heard of like Green Tara and White Tara. Mm-hmm. And so Tara is like the female emanation of Buddha. And she, this practice actually particularly was brought to the West that I do. And so the Lama, then the main Lama that we are, that our school is from, a very pure line that goes back to Tibet and Nepal, our teacher Chagud Rinpoche, he has since passed, but he has been reborn and he is actually in Tibet. He was in exile during the time in when China, and ended up making his way to the West and was guided to bring Buddhism to the West. So he's one of the first or main people that brought Buddhism to the West. Wow. And so he was actually guided to bring us Westerners Red Tara. And so just like how like our Reiki is evolving, and so does, okay, Buddhism is also an evolving practice. And just like how there's different things needed at different times, there are classic teachings that, let's say, in schools that have, that maybe continue to practice. But this particular Red Tara practice, so the Buddha has 88,000 paths to enlightenment. And while the wheel and the Dharma is turning, it's like our life. And so what happens is that teachings come up for a time, and then they might go, they might be gone for thousands, tens, thousands, millions of years before that ripening of that karma comes back and says, this teaching now needs to be delivered. So he was guided that this Red Tara teaching that has been around was to be delivered to us here. And so it's this Vajrayana path, which is called the diamond path, which means it cuts through. And so it relates to, in a way, like Takata and how she brought her method so the Westerners could learn it. I think about the kind of parallels. And so this path was brought and then put in English, and it was created for the Western mind. Because if you think of like typical Tibetan traditions and practices and language and so forth, that might be difficult for the average American to just jump into that practice. And so I know many people that like might find Buddhism, but maybe because of the methods and the teachers and the language barriers and stuff, they end up moving away because they can't quite get into the practice, because there's not like the connection to the teacher might not be there, or the practice. And so with this, it's a combination of English. So we do Tibetan as well. There's guru yoga involved. And so there's a lot of different portions. So it's been translated to English, but it's still in Tibetan. However, it provides a way for me, at least, that I can connect to that. And so what has happened then is over the years is that I have just gone deeper and deeper into that practice. And so the Red Tara is one of the practice, but I also then do your Avalokiteshvara, which is the compassionate Buddha. Mm-hmm. I do a POA practice, which is helping people to cross over when they die. I also have the medicine Buddha practice that I got from the Dalai Lama. He comes to Minnesota. It's, we have, I think, the one of the largest Tibetan populations, either the first or the second. I have it in my article, but I'd have to look it up to tell you exactly, but it's on Google. But it's a large enough Tibetan population that the Dalai Lama comes here, and also wow. for the Mayo Clinic. And I a Vajrakalaya practice as well. And so these practices have all been, I've received them through empowerments. The empowerments come through the teacher. So in a way, like a Reiki attunement.
Right.
And the teachers, unfortunately, they're not here. Most of them live in different parts of the world, and they travel to the places, or you go to them, and then you work on the practice. And so then what that's done is provided me with a spiritual practice. So by doing Buddhism, then overall what I've seen in the years is that it's a tool that's provided me additional ways to heal myself. And one of the things is that we can be stuck in our head a lot. And so by doing things like mantras and stuff, it can actually reprogram your thoughts and it can change your thoughts. And so by doing this, like the practices and stuff that I do for, let's say, Red Tara, one of the things that we do is there's a part in it. So it's Jetsun Pagma Drolma Chen Chen No Gal Chen Kunsel Sang Dang Drub Zod. And so that's illustrious Tara, please be aware of me, remove my obstacles, and quickly grant my excellent aspirations. So there's the Tibetan and the English translation of that. We need to do that over like 100,000 times.
Okay.
And so that can take months or years depending on your dedication. Or we do other like rituals and mm-hmm. so forth. And so you do these over and over again. And then eventually your energy, it changes. And so it changes your energy. So what it's done is it's not actually a religion to me. It's more of a spiritual path that has ultimately made me a better person. It's helped me to develop more compassion for people. And it has, in the last couple of years, blended in with my Reiki. And so when I do like my morning Gassho meditation or holy fire mm-hmm. meditation, I can actually bring in my prayers, my Buddhist prayers, and it ramps it up. And so when I do that, it had shown me how I can combine the two of them together to, just like what Reiki does, to amplify the results. At the end of the day, what I'll say is just provided me with more peace and healing and love and compassion and all of the good things that you would want to emanate in the world to other people. It's helped to remove obstacles from my life that were getting in the way. All of the things that Reiki can actually do for you. But somebody who's always really been connected to spirituality and religions and various things, there was something about this path. And I can tell I've got of past lives with it because of my ability to absorb it and to take it in and to work with it and to even have found the energy, you know, of the group of the people, the small group of people in Minnesota that are practicing this and being born here and having this opportunity to reconnect with this Sangha or my Dharma family and to remember these practices. And so I think back when I'm riding my bike and going, oh, it was always there. I'm just remembering this information that I have. And so ultimately, I do this to benefit other beings. It doesn't have anything to do. The whole practice for me of Buddhism is to help other people. And being on a Vajrayana Buddhist path means that you are here to help other people, and you're also helping yourself while you're doing that.
That's absolutely beautiful, Jill, and it sounds that the two paths are very much in alignment and work beautifully together.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and Jill, you're also an avid gardener, and I know you've written about that, and I'm a gardener as well. I don't know if I'm as much of a gardener as you are, but you even had a business at one time, but Reiki also worked with you there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Basically, in the article that I wrote, I really started connecting with nature more deeply after Reiki. Mm. So I felt somewhat connected before, but there was a stronger connection. What happened is that I basically, as I would be walking through the forest, hearing the energies of the forest, asking for Reiki. And after I realized that I wasn't making it up in my head, I started working with the energy. And then shortly after, I was guided to start growing food. And so over many years, I started gardening in my yard. And that just expanded and expanded to the point where we actually built what was called then a deep winter greenhouse. So living in Minnesota, I do live in sub-zero temperatures. So growing in food year-round is problematic unless you have some sort of warehouse space or hydroponics, aeroponics, various indoor ways of growing. And so a deep winter greenhouse was something that was created here in Minnesota by the University of Minnesota. There was a program, and wow, my husband and I decided that we were going to build one.
Yeah.
So we built one in our backyard in the city. We live in the city of Minneapolis, and went through the permitting and did all that. And then when we were done, we submitted our information to the University of Minnesota, and they were just blown away because they said that nobody has ever been able to pass the licensing in the city to be even build a greenhouse. So most of them are all actually out in rural areas. So they right away swooped on it. So then we were working with the University of Minnesota and the agricultural department. And then we were on this deep winter greenhouse tour where, like, all of a sudden there were like 300 people like a line down our block, like touring our greenhouse and so forth. And so it ended up like just being really really successful. And so through that whole process, Reiki had shown me a few different things. And so one of them was just working with the plants and the soil and the energies that we talked about, and just connecting with the energies in that way. And we all have that, and many of us can connect to Mother Earth and to Gaia and feel that presence. And probably like your animal communication class, sometimes we don't even realize that the energies are talking to us because we might just think it's our own thoughts and so forth. But that Reiki, for me, it helped me to go, oh, there's something more here, and so forth. And so there's that way of connecting with the earth. And then as Reiki in this project, it helped me in a few different ways. And so I used distance Reiki to actually send while we were working on this business plan and researching. I was using Reiki to send to like the success of the business, imbuing like helping other people and showing other people like that you can do this, because we're in a food desert in the winter and so forth. And so like food sustainability, all solar power, off-grid, everything like that is stuff that I'm interested in. And so it's like, how can we get this to neighborhoods where they don't have money, where they don't have access to good food? And so our whole feeling behind it was like community, empowering people, creating jobs. And so I used Reiki to put that into it. Then when it was done and we started growing, I was using the energy of just like being Reiki and infusing that into what I do, into the water and into the plants and the growing, and just beaming that Reiki energy, not really just sitting down and drawing Reiki symbols and actually like giving my plants a treatment. It's just more like the energy is emanating from me and Reiki is on and everything is receiving that energy. So when we would grow, and then we got into all these co-ops and we had CSAs, which are community supported agriculture. And so that's like when people will like 20 people will sign up at the group rate kind of a thing, and they get weekly shares. We had caterers buying stuff. And so like it and people were always like, why is this so good? Like, I've had these before, but your food is so much better. And it's because it's Reiki infused. And it ended up getting so big that we had to shut down because it got too big, and we like grew out of our location. And so we just called it good. And then around that time, I had gotten into going into the Reiki teacher training program. And so it seemed like a good time to switch gears. And so now we just grow for ourselves. And so I'm actually getting ready this weekend to start things back up and start growing some more food for the winter.
Really? What will you grow?
We'll grow microgreens and then leafy greens because the winter time specifically, because our winter greenhouse, it's a solar facing greenhouse. And so that means it's all sun powered. And so even in the winter time, light still comes in. But you have a different spectrum of light in the winter than you do in the summer. And so you're really missing, you don't have a full spectrum. And without a full spectrum of light, only certain things can grow. And so in the winter, you can actually naturally grow greens, Asian greens, microgreens, and things like that very well. And people crave them because of that, just the nutrients that you could get from that really fresh salad. And so we will start with that. And I juice them, I dehydrate them, I eat them, and friends, family, neighbors, people in need all get reap the rewards of the Reiki greens that we grow as well. So we share with people as well. So it's fun. And I'm looking forward to getting back in the greenhouse, like I said, because it's going to get cold and it's going to get dark. And so going in there, you feel, since I can't go to Hawaii this year, like my greenhouse.
That's where we met. For those who don't know, we met visiting William in Hawaii. So yes, since we can't go there.
2 years
ago. Yeah, and we went again last year, but this year we aren't able to. So the greenhouse will have to do.
Yeah, and it does feel like a beach in there. There's fans blowing. If you close your eyes and you lay back in the hammock, you could be in Hawaii.
You've inspired me to build one of those.
They're fantastic. And they're actually like popping up now all over. So they are going like into Canada and other parts of the northern United States and things like that. Yeah, it's so that's the gardening. And now I do it for fun, for enjoyment. I also do flowers. I love flowers, just the beneficial insects. Part of my animal Reiki is the insects and all of the little guys that keep us alive, as well, that are big parts. And so I love to grow things definitely that will benefit them. And it's amazing to see. One of the most rewarding things is having my garden out front and seeing people coming into my yard and just like walking in, and people literally will comment. It's like your yard, it's like magic. People know, they can feel the energy. There's kids coming up in. It's full of life. People's pets are in our, and we live in the city. So there's a certain kind of part where you've got people like walking around and so forth, but you can tell the energy is, it's bringing people in and people like yelling things out their car while I'm out there. Nice things, of course, about the garden and the energy that they can feel. I've had people come up and say, I just get healed walking in here. And so I'm like, you know what? It's working. It's pretty amazing. So it's a way of grounding for me, and it's a way of connecting, and it's a way of feeding myself and other people and just enjoying life and connecting to nature.
I love that, Jill. I just love it. Jill, you have prepared a meditation for us today. And before we begin, though, I just want to mention that if you are driving as you're listening to this, these meditations can go pretty deep. So please either pull over on the side of the road or someplace safe to listen, or just hit pause until you can listen in a place where you are safe to go quite deep. And I hope you'll join us next week for our podcast to bring in the new year, where I'll be sharing information and a meditation with you about the 12 heavens and also the lights. We'll be talking about the lights that Jill and Karen Harrison, Jay Jackson, Kathy Milanovsky, and Joan Mote we've been working with for the last year and have been bringing in. Jill, do you want to tell us a little bit about that meditation before we begin?
Sure. Yeah. I was actually guided to write this today. I wasn't exactly sure, but then all of a sudden, actually, it just came to me and I wrote it out very quickly. But it's called the Garden of Life. And so where I'm actually going to take you is into the garden. This is connected with the holy fire energy. So I will, if you've done any of our other holy fire meditations before, it does start off in a similar way as some of our other meditations. And then I'll be taking you into a place of the garden where you you will be connecting with the earth energy and a plant or a flower or something that may have some guidance for you.
Wonderful. I can't wait.
Are we ready?
We're ready.
Okay. All right. So just go ahead and close your eyes and take some deep breaths. You can go ahead and activate your Reiki energy. Just allow it to fill you up. And then I want you to imagine that it's a beautiful day. And it's warm and sunny. And you're walking down a path in a beautiful countryside. And as you breathe into yourself, you breathe in the life energy of the earth. With each step that you take, you can feel the energy of the earth flowing up through the bottoms of your feet. And as you walk along, you come upon a garden. It's the garden of life. And as you look around, you see an abundance of everything you need to sustain and nourish. You vibrate in harmony with the life that surrounds you. You're a part of it, connected, safe, and loved. You then perceive a beam of light shining down from the highest heaven. You follow it and you see it illuminating a particular plant. You step into the light and you connect with the earth energy and the plant. And it begins to guide you. Follow the guidance. Thank you.
can stay in your experience as long as you feel guided to do. When you are ready, take a few breaths. Bring your attention to your eyes. Slowly open your eyes and come back. Jill, I want to thank you for being on our podcast today, and I want to thank the listeners for joining us. We hope you have a beautiful week. Namaste.